What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I'm Lauren Berry, and this is On Deadline, where we take a look at a single topic from Odyssey's newsrooms across the country. Today, we're talking about Washington, D.C. It's a tale of two cities, because if you believe President Donald Trump's view, the nation's capital is a cesspool full of violent mobs that the government has to step in and control. And if you believe others and data from the police department there, the place is actually enjoying its lowest crime rate in nearly 30 years. And the president is just trying to stage a bit of political theater for his supporters, with D.C. as the foil. Specifically, President Trump has invoked Section 740 of the D.C. Home Rule Act to place the D.C. Police Department under direct federal control. And he's been citing rising crime in the city. This move allows Trump to deploy the National Guard to D.C. for up to 48 hours. Let's dive into what's happening on the ground in D.C., starting with a report from KCBS in the Bay Area. They talked with a professor at Loyola Law School, Lori Levinson, about the powers the president is using to deploy the National Guard in D.C.
I'm so happy that we have you to break this all down. Can you tell us about the specific legal authority of Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act that they're citing for this action?
Yes, as you mentioned, Washington, D.C. is different from the states, for example, because it's generally under federal control, but it has its own law enforcement force. So the president can use something called the Home Rule Act to call out their National Guard and have them relate to crime emergencies. But it very specifically says in the statute that he can only do so under special conditions. Now, President Trump is saying the soaring crime in D.C. are those special conditions. But frankly, the statistics show that the crime has been going down and is now at a 30-year low in the district. So this is really just sort of more of a political maneuver by President Trump. He can do so under that law, but it's supposed to be limited to 48 hours.
Only 48 hours. That's interesting. Now, he also is deploying the National Guard. How is that different?
Well, there are plenty of federal law enforcement groups in D.C. already, the ATF, the FBI, and the like. But calling in the National Guard, I think that's about 800 members who would be assigned to Washington, D.C., reminds us of what he did in California. It's quite different because the Capitol is not a separate state, but he's calling them in, and under the limitations of the act, they're not supposed to act just like other police officers. They're supposed to get involved to protect public safety. And so if you had something like an insurrection or people on the streets who were posing dangers to others, that's usually what they're supposed to use for. What's confusing, however, is this executive order that he's issuing that makes it sound like, well, I'm going to run the D.C. Police Department now.
Yeah, that is what it is. He said. He said as much. I think he said taken over. How did he? The wording was it struck me. Has this provision ever been invoked before, this Home Rule Act to take over the D.C. Police Department?
We have had situations where just for a day or so. In fact, the D.C. has had the National Guard come in and help when there have been protests or dangerous protests in the streets. But we haven't seen this type of situation. This is very Trump-like, where he just says, I don't like, for example, that someone he knows got attacked, so I'm going to take over the local police. I'm going to clean up the streets. I'm going to get rid of the homeless. That's much more like him taking over all the police functions in the D.C., and that, frankly, is not what's supposed to be covered by the Home Rule Act.
So we heard the mayor come out and say, you know, as you mentioned, that crime was actually coming down. Will there be a legal avenue for her to pursue?
There will be. I mean, the question is, in the time permitting, does Trump plan to keep this action going for more than 48 hours? Then I definitely think you can expect that the mayor and others will go to court to put limits on it. On the other hand, he might just want to make a big splash, have a 48-hour action, start picking up people off the street, and then sort of leave it to that so that they don't have to fight the court action.
How will this even work for 2 days when they're in control? Like, who's in charge?
Well, that's hard to say because his executive order doesn't say that, although it almost sounds like he's getting Hegseth involved, and that's really a stretch because he's supposed to be involved in military actions. So we don't know specifically who will be calling out the order. We heard the head of the FBI today saying we're going to take on the streets of D.C. I think that they're kind of making it up as they go along, and that itself is fraught with danger. We have, as you know, a trial that's going to be starting imminently in San Francisco about what the limits are on what National Guard can do. They probably can do more for 48 hours in D.C., but there are still limits.
Yeah, let's go to that trial that's just starting. What do you think about that? How important is this? What are you expecting?
I think it's incredibly important, and I do think it's wonderful, frankly, that Judge Charles Breyer decided, even though he was overruled on whether the National Guard could be called out by the president, and the Ninth Circuit said they could, they still have limited abilities to do what they did on the streets. So they're not supposed to act like law enforcement. They're supposed to protect federal officers as they do their job or protect federal properties. But otherwise, they might be in violation of something called the Posse Comitatus Act, which is more than 100 years old. But it is important. It distinguishes America from other countries where you have military occupations. It says if you use the National Guard, they can't just become your law enforcement, and they can't go out and do all the arrests and interrogations like local law enforcement would do.
And we don't know how Judge Breyer will rule, but would this be something that would go higher?
Oh, this very well could go to the Supreme Court, but I think one of the reasons to have this trial is not simply to get an injunction, which is what they're asking for, to say don't allow the National Guard to be used like this in the future. I really think it's to make a public record of what happened in June in Los Angeles when Trump called out the National Guard, contrary to what Newsom wanted, and to make sure the public knows exactly what was happening on the streets in California.
Back to D.C., I guess it could apply in Los Angeles as well. Any anticipated impact on civil liberties and the right to protest under this new arrangement for 48 hours?
Unquestionably. I think that that's part of what's going on here, which is to try to chill people from public protests, to basically recharacterize public protests as an emergency situation that are making the streets unsafe. And, you know, again, the facts have to be those that people see, that the media reports, not simply what is reported out of the White House.
Okay, this is kind of a bigger question, but what about any political ramifications, either for the president, but also for the movement for D.C. statehood?
Well, I think that the president is threatening everything about D.C. statehood, basically saying he just wants to absorb D.C. as a district into part of his realm in D.C. and not have them have separate rights. And as we know, they don't have the same voting rights or representation in Congress. So this could have a long-term impact. On the other hand, it could backfire. We have a history in this nation that when you try to go too forcefully against the civilian population, people push back.
President Trump uses such colorful language when he speaks. He was describing something about, you know, like the bands of criminals riding on ATVs through Washington, D.C. And I'm just curious, like, how does the local community, in particular those in the high crime areas, do they react to increased federal presence?
They push back. I mean, as you mentioned, the Democratic mayor of D.C., Muriel Bowser, has been saying that this is just the rhetoric by Trump, but it's not the experience for the people in D.C. Now, we all know that there is crime in D.C. Frankly, there's crime in every American city. But this is a target attack against a Democratic city that is a little easier for Trump to do because he can use that Home Rule Act at least for 48 hours.
So you mentioned we had L.A. Mayor Karen Bass, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, both women of color. The optics here are kind of interesting. I don't know. Am I interpreting that wrong?
I don't think you are from the political perspective, but that's very much what Trump does. He likes the optics, and so he'll change the optics. Back in 89, he was calling for changes in New York because of the Central Park jogger case, but he had his facts totally off there. So he's going to attack people who he sees as the other. And in this situation, as you mentioned, the mayors of Los Angeles and D.C., they certainly look like the other to him and his supporters.
I want to play one cut from President Trump from this morning's press conference and then get your reaction.
Police are saying, and they're told, don't do anything under any search of this, and you can see they want to get at it. And they're standing there, and people are spitting in their face, and they're not allowed to do anything. But now they are allowed to do whatever the hell they want.
Okay. Legally, what can we do here?
I couldn't hear everything about it. Someone's spitting in someone's face.
Oh, I'm sorry. He was talking about how the police line up, and often they hold the line. People spit in their faces, and they're told they can't move. Just stand there and take it. And what he's saying, hit them back. You can do, quote, whatever the hell you want.
Well, they cannot, because we do have a constitution, and that limits what police can do, whoever's calling them out. So it doesn't mean the National Guard can start shooting people because the homeless won't move from the streets. The courts can still enforce the constitutional rights under the Fourth Amendment and other amendments to protect individuals. I'm not endorsing people spitting or otherwise attacking law enforcement. Nobody would support that. But this idea that if people are protesting, which they have a lawful right to do in this country, then we're going to give law enforcement the right to do whatever they want, that's a very scary notion.
Can you just explain or maybe verify how the president has taken over under federal control for 2 days this police department? This could only happen in D.C. It couldn't happen to another city.
It could only happen in D.C. under the Home Rule Act, for what they call special conditions, which can involve crime-related emergencies. In other cities, like in Los Angeles, you really have to have something more that can be called an insurrection or actual physical attacks on federal law enforcement. And that's what he used back in June to call out the National Guard then, and then he could keep the National Guard and the Marines, let's not forget, in the city for longer.
There's been a lot of talk. I mean, he is such a strong executive. I mean, can you put that into, I guess this is allowed. I mean, so many of the things that he's done, from firings to this move to bringing in the National Guard in Los Angeles, decisions on executive power decisions that just seem so out of context compared to recent history.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that defines Trump. In his presidency, he wants to maximize the power of the executive branch, and he's doing it in every way that he can, from the ICE raids to calling out the National Guard to firing people. It's flexing muscle every single day. And one thing I was thinking about is people then very much focus on that and forget other things that Trump doesn't want them to think about, whether it be the Epstein investigation or problems with the tariffs or the likewise. These get public attention.
Absolutely. You work in the law. You know how the law works. You know how sometimes it's a slow wheel. So many of these cases are moving through the courts, and there is a frustration among the citizenry that decisions aren't made more quickly. What can you say to people who are frustrated?
It's frustrating, but it's important. You do want the courts to get it right. And there's a lot of pressure. I actually think that the courts have been working amazingly hard and as fast as they can. But unlike the president, who can just make these claims that, you know, crime is out of control in D.C. when it really fell 26% even this year, the courts have to have a clear, solid, factual record. And so it is frustrating. It's also very taxing on those who do this work. They're spread so thin because there have been so many actions by Trump. I think the count currently is that there are more than 200 lawsuits against the Trump administration for these type of unilateral actions that they've been bringing.
Are checks and balances still intact?
Not like they were before. Checks and balances, in my mind, means that you have the executive branch, and you have the legislative branch, and you have the judicial branch. I think most people recognize that our legislative branch is not much of a check on what the president wants to do. And so it's all falling on the judicial branch, who's been attacked rhetorically by the president and otherwise. And we have a judicial branch, at least the Supreme Court, that's very inclined to back him on whatever he does. So we have, I guess, on paper, checks and balances, but we have seen this year that they're not really operating the way we might expect or the way they have in prior years.
Thank you so much for being with us and for breaking it down. We always appreciate you. That is Lori Levinson, law professor at Loyola Law School in Southern California.
Trump is acting based on what he says is out-of-control crime. Here's more from KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow on what the president is saying and what the statistics show.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
He's planning to address crime and homelessness in Washington, D.C. What are you expecting?
A lot of tough talk. I think you just sort of heard a synopsis of it. Crime is absolutely a problem in D.C., as is in metro cities, you know, all across metro areas across the country. D.C. is roughly the size of San Francisco, population-wise, and it has nearly twice as many murders. Okay, that's a big problem. All the other crime, I just looked at the statistics, virtually the same. San Francisco, you know, the aggravated assaults. I think San Francisco has more residential burglaries, but they're essentially the same. But what the mayor of D.C. pointed out is true, that crime is not spiking. Crime is going down. There was a big spike in homicides during COVID and immediately after COVID in D.C. That has gone back down. So I think homicide rates are down about 30%. And it's a strange dance D.C. city officials are doing, because I think they love the idea of more federal assistance, you know, more troops or police officers or law enforcement in the city. They would love to keep their grants for, you know, judges and rehab programs and those things going. But to the extent that the president's going to stand up there, which is what we expect from what he put out in social media over the weekend, and say, this is a disgusting crime-ridden city, and I've had enough, as he says, no more Mr. Nice Guy. I think the mayor is pretty concerned that he's going to be portraying D.C. in a far worse light than it is.
Have you heard any details about this plan to relocate the homeless individuals, quote, far from the Capitol?
This is... You know, obviously we spend hours talking about this. People talk about relocating the homeless. The question is where? You know, I live just outside D.C. You can bring them here. I don't think my neighbors are not going to like that. You want to send them out to California? It's one thing to house the homeless, but to relocate the homeless, what the president has expressed concern about is that foreign leaders come into town, or when he's coming in and out in his motorcade, you know, there's urban blight that you can see. It's like San Francisco, there are tours you could take people in San Francisco where you would just say, oh my God, what is wrong with this city? But there are also, you could spend hours driving around the city saying, what are they talking about crime? This is the most beautiful city I've ever seen. Same is true in Washington, D.C. Who knows what he says about, who knows what he's going to, you know, say about what to do about the homeless? One of the things that push this is there's this guy who works for Elon Musk on Doge, 19 or 20 years old. You know, hopefully I can say this on radio, known as Big Balls because of his propensity to be unabashed with cutting programs. Well, he got carjacked last weekend, got beat up, and there are pictures of him very bloody. That pushed Trump over the edge, and he says he's not going to stand for it. And by the way, just our classy president, what did he call San Francisco's former Speaker of the House, current representative over the weekend for unclear why he called her this? He says she was a disgusting degenerate. Those are Trump's words on Nancy Pelosi over the weekend.
Oh, boy. Okay. I do have one question before we get to the opening numbers. I wanted to ask you the parallels, if there are any, with the president deploying federal law enforcement in D.C. and Los Angeles.
The difference is this to him is sort of a permanent, you know, Los Angeles, he made the case that Los Angeles was burning to the ground because of the riots that were going on there, despite the mayor saying that's not the case. It's similar in the sense that he's also deploying National Guard, but I think he sees this as sort of a permanent solution. It's sort of like, I'm going to take control and, you know, we'll see what happens. People in D.C. are going to. Remember, he only got about 6% of the vote here. Donald Trump is not particularly popular among the people who live in Washington.
Should other cities prepare to be next? The president has suggested that he would attempt similar takeovers in cities run by Democrats. But legal experts at Penn and Temple in Pennsylvania, among others, say such a move would violate the Constitution. KYW News Radio's City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb reports.
Temple's chair of law and government, Craig Green, says unlike D.C., states' rights are protected by the 10th Amendment.
There is a constitutional principle preventing him from taking control of state and local officials in that way. Commandeering is what it's called. There's an anti-commandeering principle.
And yet, Green adds, there doesn't seem to be a basis for the D.C. takeover either, which is permitted only in the case of an emergency. That's why Penn Professor Claire Finkelstein says cities like Philadelphia should be getting ready.
The fact that something is not legal doesn't mean that the president won't do it.
She says a state or city could file a federal suit if the president attempted a takeover, but those are lengthy and unpredictable.
Federal law is very much in flux, and we see the Supreme Court taking an ever more sympathetic approach to presidential power.
Finkelstein says a federal takeover might spark protests, but they could in turn be used as a pretext for further federal control. Pat Loeb, KYW News Radio, 103.9 FM.
So everybody has an opinion about this and whether it's necessary and why Trump is doing it. Is it really a pretext for more federal control of local communities? That actually seems to fly in the face of the regular MAGA position about the overarching power of states' rights. Does the president truly want to disregard democratic norms and the separation of powers? Or does he genuinely believe that D.C. needs more support to fight crime? Here's a look at what Chad Hartman, a host at WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, thinks is driving the events in D.C.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Crime, obviously, in D.C. has been a major problem for much less 60 years. That is irrefutable. You know what else is irrefutable? Because, again, numbers that are documented, if it doesn't fit him, and no, I will not say the word narrative. If it doesn't fit him, he says they're fake numbers. And he said that today. The actual documented numbers, crime, violent crime, let's just go there. In D.C., violent crime last year was down 26%. Violent crime in America, down 4%. Still should be better. It's not as safe as it should be. Downtown Minneapolis, not as safe as it should be. But so many of the people who will say it's a hellscape, it's awful, you can't go from corner to corner, number one, never come down here. I come down here all the time. Somehow, some way, I'm not shot. For some reason, I think we should have more police and support the police in some ways when it suits broadly, in other cases individually, whereas Donald Trump supports the police when it supports his position. Because he sat there when some thugs and some disgusting individuals who broke into the Capitol and harmed and wanted to kill police officers. That's not everyone. Not everyone who walked from the Capitol or walked from the Trump speech. Not everyone there was intent on violence. They weren't. They made mistakes. They should not have went inside. They should not have. But there are others who were threatening to hang Mike Pence, kill Nancy Pelosi, and hundreds were involved in harming police officers, and he didn't do anything hour after hour after hour, and now he's going to step up when the data is going the right way. This is just, I was going to say the start. It's not the start. It's a continuation. Get back to me when he goes to a Republican city, too, because guess what? When you go to Republican states or cities run by Republicans, you're just assuming there's no crime, because that's a lie. That is just a flat out lie. So mobilizing 800 National Guard members, put D.C. police under federal control, have the AG run the D.C. police, FBI agents to patrol the city. This is what we want. In 2025, when violent crime in the city is down 26%, but when the Capitol was attacked, perpetuated by his lies, he lost. He won in 16, he won in 24, and God knows he might win in 28. But he got beat by Joe Biden in 2020, and even though all sorts of people came to him and told him, he wouldn't accept it. And by the way, if you're going to try this Pelosi charade, just look up his own Secretary of Defense at the time, who said, never did Donald Trump issue a plea for the National, a formal order for the National Guard. This idea that the president couldn't have the National Guard out there. Remember, you heard that? Oh, it's up to the Speaker of the House. Well, then what the bleep just happened today? How about the video? You've seen all the video and audio where Pelosi, Schumer, McConnell, other Republicans are begging for the guard. We've seen the documented texts where his own kids are begging Trump to tell them, call off your dogs, get more law enforcement there. And he didn't do it for hour after hour after hour. It's so convenient where somebody will text me, oh, look, at 2:26 he did this. What about the other hour? And so now this is what we're going to do. And he's not going to stop. He is not going to stop, and he clearly has greater control in D.C. than he does other cities. But when he's sitting there and he's citing New York, Chicago, L.A., Baltimore, he's going there. He's going there. By the way, when law enforcement supports him, he's Mr. Back the Blue. When law enforcement is not behind him, he targets them and fires them. Individuals of the FBI, if they don't have the purity test for Trump, they're out. DOJ. By the way, some of these folks are just doing their job. They're just doing, okay, here's the case. It involves the former president investigated. That doesn't make you automatically some crazed lefty. There probably are some crazed lefty, just like there's some crazed righties. But more often than not, these people are just doing their job. And so, yes, he's reacting to some legitimate, dangerous situation. To say our cities are as safe as they should be is just a lie. But we want the Attorney General of the United States of America, who has no independence from the president in any way, to be running D.C.? You want our National Guard out all over this country? How about this concept? Let's pass a bill called the Big Beautiful Bill and put an overwhelming amount of money in to train and hire more quality police officers. And then what's going to happen is the overwhelming majority of those police officers are going to be very good, some amazing. And then a certain percentage will be lousy, like every job has people who aren't very good at what they do. And you'll have a way to get rid of those folks, to fire those folks. This is when quality, high-quality people join the National Guard. Might be your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter, a friend. This is what you want them doing, policing the United States of America. There's an enormous difference between locally trained law enforcement, Golden Valley PD, Nevis PD, Hibbing PD, versus the Minnesota National Guard, and there are times. Tim Walz, let's get to there. Late. Oh, I pointed that out over and over again, and have pointed it out endlessly since then. Jacob Frey, overwhelmed. The police weren't ready for it. Trump, of course, making it up, you know, saying that he told Walz what to do and Walz was turning him down. Walz was late to it. But the idea conceptually of, well, you got to give a little training to the National Guard. Let's not forget when they went to Southern California, they had nowhere for them to sleep. They had no idea what they were going to do. And I got it. There are plenty of people listening right now thinking, you're 100% wrong. What we need is law and order. I am telling you, I'm backing the blue in almost every case outside of the rare, awful cases, and they happen rarely. But he wants, as the head of the federal government, to run it. In court today, the administration is battling Gavin Newsom on the military deployment of 5,000 troops that were sent to L.A. during ICE raids. That is happening in our country about this. So I am not saying what's happening in our cities across the country is good enough. But when you have one making this type of progress, second lowest violent crime numbers in 60 years. But I'm the sheriff, and I'm going to show you again what I can do. And get ready, because it's going to happen more.
One of the things that makes people wonder about the president's motivations in D.C. is the fact that he fired the commissioner of labor statistics when he didn't like what a report showed about the lack of job growth in the U.S. The firing has been widely panned, even among some conservatives. Here is the president's defense of that move, explained by Mark Sandalow.
Mark, what is your reaction to this firing?
Donald Trump has always had a shaky relationship with, you know, with facts and numbers. This one seems to be going, you know, a bit far. So it's the unemployment numbers, which have been done the same way for almost 100 years now. And it's a common, you know, people talk about the unemployment rate like it's some set figure. It's a poll. It's a set number of companies who fill out reports every month, and people polling people out looking for work. And they do this the first Friday of every month. They release these numbers. And the woman who was in charge of this, who was confirmed by the Senate with over 93 votes a few years ago, simply then forwards those numbers. They did not conform to what Donald Trump liked, and so he got rid of her. And what's remarkable to me is, I mean, there's an awful lot of, you know, reporting now about how this is the first step towards being an authoritarian and a dictator. And if you don't like the numbers, you simply get rid of the person. And, you know, that may well, be what's going on. What's remarkable, though, is when I look at certain parts of the news media and their reporting of this, while there are a lot of folks on Wall Street who are upset about this because they need numbers to make investment projections, and they can't have a chief executive say his opinion is that the numbers are wrong based not on fact. But if you listen to, say, Fox Business News or Fox News, I was just looking through some of the reports, they make no mention of the actual facts in the case. They simply say that Trump says her numbers were wrong, that the numbers were made to make him look bad, that they're incompetent, and they leave it at that. What they don't point out is that the revisions that she did
that Trump was upset with are completely standard procedure and have happened under every president. And, you know, just a couple months ago, Trump was touting the very same officials' numbers that made employment figures look good, but they don't look good now, so he's gotten rid of her.
So what faith can – he's going to appoint a new head of this agency, and what faith can we put in those numbers after that?
So that's the scary part, Eric, is, you know, there are thousands and thousands of people who go into these reports. And the assumption is that somebody simply can't take a, you know, well, the unemployment rate is 4.2%. Let's call it 3.2%. And no one won't scream and yell about that. So presumably the numbers can still be legit. But this definitely sends a message to bureaucrats around the country. Look, this happens all the time in all sorts of businesses when we're talking about spin. You know, it's one thing to say unemployment rate or employment rates disappointing. That's opinion. But the Labor Department doesn't do that. They simply put out numbers. You know, they'll say 154,000 jobs were added last month. It's for the, you know, for the pundits and economists to say whether it's good or bad. You can always spin something. If we start to get bureaucrats who spin things and say 19,000 jobs added in record boost, then we know, you know, something is afoot. But there is great concern in Washington over what this means. Again, this is not new for Donald Trump. The difference is, it's usually part of his rhetoric. You know, he'll make up statistics about crime rates and about immigration. He says there are twice as many undocumented immigrants as are most of the agencies report. But that's not government policy. But it is now government policy he is messing with, and that has some people concerned.
Thank you so much for listening to On Deadline. This episode was written and produced by Christy Strouser and by me, Lauren Berry. Please subscribe to On Deadline on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Mind right now. The song you can't get out of your head, that breaking story, or that conversation you just have to be a part of.
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.